Overhead Door Company, the original garage door company, serving you for over 90 years. Call 843-767-0028 or overheaddoorco.com. Overhead Door Company of Charleston, proud to open hour two of the Morrow Midday Show. This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Guess who's back, 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 back again. Sadie's back, back, back. Tell a friend, friend, friend. Guess who's back, 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 guess who's back.
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up in just a moment, I'll let you know where I've been right and wrong over the past week with some of the things we've said or predicted or pined on here on the show. Get to that coming up in just a few moments. The latest on Coach Baucom, who, if you missed the story, the scary situation last night at the start of the game against Duke, he collapsed on the Citadel sideline. Eventually had to go to the hospital. He's still in the hospital, but the latest statement is that he is stable and well and is expected to be released from Duke University Hospital this afternoon to return to Charleston. No word on a diagnosis. We do know Coach has had some heart issues over the years in the past, and you never want to speculate on something like this. But he collapsed last night, never did lose consciousness. Was alert, was aware, was talking with his assistants, and the medical personnel just said that he was in a lot of pain. Eventually, they got him off the floor to the hospital. Was hoping to travel back with the team today, you know, this morning. That's not the case. He's still in the hospital, but they hope that Coach Baucom can be released this afternoon to return back to the Lowcountry. So, obviously, we send our thoughts and prayers here from the Morrow Midday Show to Coach and his family. It was supposed to be a joyous occasion, coaching at Duke last night. That was like the pinnacle, right? After he originally started as a state trooper, started out coaching JV basketball, working his way up to, that was his dream to coach there, and that's how it goes. And I guess the message would be that, in case he needed another reminder, right, that things can change so suddenly. Enjoy every moment. You're getting ready to tip off against Duke, and the next thing you know, you have to go to the hospital for a scary situation. So things can change in the blink of an eye. You know, as Warren Zevon said before he passed away, enjoy every sandwich. Enjoy everything you do. Get the most out of life, because you never know when things could change, unfortunately, sometimes for the worst. So we certainly hope the best for Coach. Should be back in the Lowcountry, hopefully, later on today. Get out of the hospital and be able to travel back. And for the Bulldogs, hung in there against Duke last night, lost by 26. Before we get to where I've been right and wrong, as we do every week on the show, you can always join the conversation. Let's first go to the phones, 843-721-9500 to give us a call. Let's go to the phones. Rob in Charleston is with us. Rob, what's going on? How are you?
I'm all right. How you doing?
Doing well. What's up?
I had to call. Weren't you, I want to say it was maybe last year, the year before, weren't you contending that the Die Hard movies were not Christmas movies?
Yeah, we've had this debate before.
I just had to call because...
Yeah, go ahead.
Home Alone movies are in the same exact boat for me as Die Hard. I mean, I consider them all Christmas movies, but I don't know how you could not consider Die Hard a Christmas movie, but Home Alone a Christmas movie.
Well, I think Christmas plays a larger role in Home Alones. In Die Hard, Christmas is like the reason for the events, for him being there and the party and everything. But Home Alone, I think it's more of a plot, at least in the second one. Maybe not so much the first one, but the second one, I think it's more of like a storyline revolving around Christmas with the family. It's a fair debate. I certainly see the parallels between the two. It's not like an elf or a jingle all the way where it's all about Christmas. It just happens to take place at Christmas. And in the case of Home Alone, the kids, you know, left Home Alone or he travels to the wrong city and it just so happens to be around Christmas, just like the events of Die Hard. So I get the debate. I just think, at least for Home Alone 2, that the Christmas aspect plays a larger role in the storyline than it does for Die Hard. In that movie, so that's if maybe I'm splitting hairs here, but that's the difference for me. That I just think you get more Christmas with Home Alone. It smacks you over the head a little bit more about Christmas than Die Hard.
All right, I guess that's fair. But then the one last point that I want to make, you're talking about Nick Boyle and Andy Dalton and all that. That's a great reason to be thankful that neither of those guys are your team's quarterback. So you got that going for you.
That's a good point. That's fair.
All right, appreciate it, Thanksgiving.
Yeah, likewise. Appreciate you. That's a good point. Joe also said, you know, most people, you have the turkey. What's it, the tryptophan? Is that what it's called? It makes you sleepy. The problem is they always put the Lions as the first game because the Cowboys are the bigger draw, and maybe you're traveling or you have an early lunch, so the NFL feels like the better window, just like on a Sunday. You know, that's why they put that premier game at the 4:30. They feel like that's the better spot. So that Cowboys game, the Cowboys always play second. So the Lions are kicking off at noon or 12:30, whatever it is. I don't think you're ready for the nap just yet. You haven't eaten. So I like that thought process, but then we'd have to swap it. Put the Cowboys first. When you first get to your uncles, your aunts, wherever, your cousins, and you're chatting with everybody and you're just having like the celery and, you know, you're having like the vegetable plate as you wait for the turkey dinner and you're watching the Cowboys, you have something good on TV. Then you could put the Lions second, and I guess this depends on families, what time you eat. My family growing up, we would try to actually plan it in between the two games, and then you usually miss a little bit of the beginning of the second game. We'd have to rewind and start from the beginning. So it depends what time you eat your Thanksgiving meal, but that'd be a good reason to do it a little bit later. It's like, oh, the Lions are playing. Oh, yeah, we don't need to watch this game. We can sit down and take our time at the dinner table, you know, after the Cowboys, whoever the Cowboys play. And then you come back, second half of the Lions game, they're probably down 21-0. Then you could take your nap. So I think it could play well if they swap the times. But the Lions kicking off at about noon, it's too early. You're just getting to your own. Oh, the Lions, oh, we don't have to pay attention until 4 o'clock. So you could do your traveling at least. You could travel. You don't have to bust your hump to get there early because you're not missing anything. Yeah, you got the stupid Lions playing this year against the Bears and their backup quarterback. But, yes, I guess that's a fair point. As you get to the dinner table this holiday and tell your relatives what you're thankful for, if your family actually does that stuff, you can say I'm thankful that my team's not starting Tim Boyle or Andy Dalton, depending on your quarterback situation, which we will get into more a little bit later on. We're already having, see, we're breaking all the rules. We're already having the Christmas movie debate about Die Hard and Home Alone. The first Home Alone, I get it, although there is still quite a few Christmas like scenes throughout the movie. He runs into the Santa, you know, you got like the manger scene outside that he hides. There's certain things that really smack you over the head that it's Christmas. More so Home Alone 2. And, yeah, I love those movies so much that without even watching, I just listened on my car ride over because Tim Curry steals every scene in that movie. I just need to hear the lines. I don't even need to see them, and it still cracks me up. Every Tuesday on the show, I let you know where I've been right and where I've been wrong over the past week. And we give you big opinions. When I get something right, of course, you love to brag. When I get something wrong, I'll hold myself accountable. Let's try it now. Go through these. Where I've been right, where I've been wrong over the past week. We always start with a positive. Where I've been right.
Where Luke was right.
I'm going to take a victory lap with the Gamecocks, and let me explain why. I've heard a lot of others take victory laps in the last couple of days, pointing to the win total for Vegas for South Carolina at 3.5. And those who thought that South Carolina would be better than that have been bragging the last couple of days. So I said, you know what? If they're going to brag, I'm going to brag a little bit as well. Now, to be fair, I always give myself a one-game buffer. When I was making picks this year, in the NFL, we ran through every team. I gave two options, right? They'll either win 9 or 10 games. I didn't give you an exact number. So for South Carolina, I said 5 or 6 games. So if I'm being fair, I did give myself a little bit of wiggle room there, right? A little bit of a larger range. I didn't give you a solid number. I said if I had to pick, I would go 5, but I think 5 or 6, they win more than 3.5. And sure enough, they've gotten to the 6 to the bowl game. I said that would be ideal. That's the goal. I see all these other people taking victory laps, so here we are taking ours. I told you the Gamecocks will be better than that 3.5. I thought they'd have a chance to make a bowl. They're in a bowl. They won some games I wasn't expecting, like Florida and or Auburn. We'll see what they can do this weekend. But they're going to a bowl game. I told you that would be a possibility. They'd be better than 3.5. I don't think it's as big of a surprise as everybody's making it out to be. But I see a lot of others taking victory laps saying, oh, I told you they can make a bowl in year one. So we're doing it here because I said the same thing as well. So I was right on the Gamecocks getting over 5 wins.
Where Luke was wrong.
Cincinnati. Cincinnati had not played well for a couple of weeks. And I thought this was the week it's finally going to catch up to them. SMU was a ranked team. SMU hasn't been playing as well lately, but they are talented. Now, they're missing their top 2 wide receivers. That doesn't help. But that's not the difference between losing by 49 and winning a game. just because of those two receivers. I mean, it's a big difference, but not that big of a difference. And I was wrong about Cincinnati. I put them on upset alert. I did not think they'd cover the spread. I didn't even think they'd win against SMU. And boy, did they. They came out and put the hurting on and sent a message early on to people like me, to the committee, to everybody who fairly have been criticizing them for their performances recently, but then they showed what they're capable of. And that's a solid for them in that conference. That's a good SMU team that they went up against, and they played really well. And that's the Cincinnati performance that we were expecting to see throughout this year, that we've been waiting to see, that we got a little bit of early in the season and then disappeared here in the midseason. That's a big win for Cincy. Plus, they got some help around them. We'll see where they land in the playoff rankings tonight. But that's a powerful win. You can't keep winning these games in which you're not covering the spread and it's a one-possession game in the fourth quarter. If you're Cincinnati and you want to try to get the respect as a group of five team, you got to win games like that. That was a big-time win for Cincinnati on Saturday. I was way off. As I said, I thought they were going to lose. They win by 40 points. So talk about being way off base. I was completely off on Cincinnati this week.
Where Luke was right.
Oregon, and therefore the Pac-12. Now, I don't know if I really went out on a limb when I said the Pac-12 wouldn't have a playoff team again this year. I mean, that's become the norm. But it looked like for a while there, Oregon could change that. Last week on the show, just like with Cincinnati, I said, Oregon, you got to play Utah twice here the rest of the way. I don't think they could beat them twice. I'll be honest with you. I did not see that outcome coming on Saturday. I thought maybe it'd be the conference championship. I thought maybe it'd be a close loss. But I did not think Oregon could get past Utah twice and actually finish off this run to the playoff. Utah is a well-coached team with Kyle Whittingham. They're going to the Pac-12 championship for the third time in the last 4 years, and they were on home. They were at home Saturday. They were a favorite. So even though, you know, I said Oregon's on upset alert, I mean, they were the underdog, so maybe technically it wasn't an upset. But they got beat up bad, and that was the worst game for Mario Cristobal really since head coach of Oregon. And it shows the limitations. You know, Oregon in the Pac-12, they were winning, but they were winning close. A lot of single-digit games. And they were going up against a good Utah team. You knew eventually would catch up to them. You can't keep winning close like that. Kind of like what we've been talking about with Cincinnati, right? You got to put some teams away. You got to show that you're superior. Oregon really had it, and it caught up to them in a big way Saturday against Utah. They got beat up. They got blown out. They got beaten by their own style. And now Oregon crossed them off the list, cross off the Pac-12. I didn't think they had enough in them to finish this run. Sure enough, they don't even make it to championship weekend as a playoff contender.
Where Luke was wrong.
I got to take a big L here on Florida and specifically Dan Mullen. I have defended Dan Mullen throughout. I'm a big Dan Mullen fan in terms of just his ability as a play caller and I think even a head coach. You know, I've heard a lot of the rhetoric in the last week or two talking about, he can't coach. He should go be an offensive coordinator. I mean, really, we're going to forget about all the things he's done prior to this year. But with that said, I'm taking the loss for a couple of reasons. Number one, Florida in particular. I told you Florida would be better this year than expectations. I was way off. They were far worse this year than even the expectations. I thought they would be fine despite the talent they lost. I was wrong. I thought the quarterback position, I said Emory Jones is going to be okay. I was off. Emory Jones shouldn't even be the starting quarterback. The quarterback position has been a bit of a disaster for Florida. And then in regards to Dan Mullen, same idea. I've been touting him all year, telling you how good of a coach he is. This year was a disaster. He didn't even make it through the year. He lost his job. I was off on everything involving Florida this year. I thought they would be better than expected. I thought they would be just fine. I thought Dan Mullen would do a good job and show how good of a coach he was. In fact, I was calling him a top three coach in the SEC. Well, now he's not coaching in the SEC. So I was way off on really everything involving Florida this year. You could say I put my trust in the wrong guy. And Dan Mullen and the Gators let me down.
Where Luke was right.
One of the picks I gave you on Friday was UCLA against USC. And I said, USC, they don't have a coach. They've quit. They've checked out. They're ready for the offseason. You got to get somebody in here to turn this thing around and really save this program. UCLA then went out there on Saturday and gave USC the largest loss in that series since, I think it's 1954. It was also the most points UCLA has ever scored against USC. It was on the road in their building, and they beat them by over 30. They creamed them. It wasn't even close. USC has checked out. They need somebody to come in and really turn that thing around. It is not good for college football when you have USC losing by 30 points to UCLA, when you have USC as an irrelevant program losing week after week, nobody cares. There's no buzz around the program. They're in a bad spot. Now, the right coach can fix it and fix it quickly. But as we sit here currently today without a head coach, right, without Clay Helton and Drum at the quarterback position and the team seemingly checked out, they're a disaster. It's not good for the conference or college football. And it was one of the picks I gave you on Friday. I knew UCLA with Chip Kelly, who's still, you know, he's coaching for his job. USC doesn't even have a coach. You knew you were going to get a good effort. It just shows the spot that USC's in right now. Doesn't mean they can't fix it and fix it, you know, pretty quick with the right coach, but they're in a bad way at the moment. And UCLA got an easy win and really an embarrassing loss for USC on Saturday.
Where Luke was right.
This is another pretty big L for me. Cliff Kingsbury. I really didn't like the hire. I didn't think it was going to work out. And even as he started his tenure at the Cardinals, you know, I was kind of taking some victory laps those first 2 years. He got off to good starts. His team would then fade. They couldn't play physical football. They couldn't win the biggest games of the year. But this year, I got to give Kingsbury a lot of props. Of course, the obvious, I mean, the Cardinals are 9-2. They're in first place. But the job he's done these last couple of weeks with Colt McCoy. They've won 2 out of 3 games, and in those 2 wins, McCoy has played really well. He looks like, you know, if you're a Washington football team fan, you're thinking, like, where has this guy been? Why don't we keep him, and why couldn't he play like this for us? He's played like a Pro Bowl quarterback in 2 out of 3 starts, and that goes back to coaching. Maybe the system as well, but the system is also Cliff Kingsbury. So Cliff deserves a lot of credit. We've seen teams deal with some adversity this year, lose some of their players. You know, Russell Wilson goes down, or now he's playing injured. The Seahawks look lousy. Aaron Rodgers didn't play great this past weekend, missing a couple of offensive linemen, at least not for the first half. He played better in the second half. The Cowboys. Dak Prescott without his left tackle, and by the second half, 2 of his receivers did not play well. They scored 9 points. But for the Cardinals, you remove a guy who is playing at an MVP level. You replace him with Colt McCoy, and really they haven't skipped a beat. They won on the road pretty easily against Seattle on Sunday. Kingsbury is doing a really good job this year. Not only is his team in first place and maybe overachieving, but they're also doing a great job dealing with adversity as well. Props to Kingsbury, who has figured it out here in year 3, and the Cardinals are flourishing.
Where Luke was wrong.
The Falcons. I thought the Falcons would turn things around Thursday night. I thought it was a great spot for Atlanta. And that was my pick on Thursday. Now, you know, if you do gamble, if you do make picks, there are certain things where you don't regret a choice. And I really don't regret that. I would take the Falcons again because I like that situation. But with that said, they went out there, laid an egg, and showed they're just not a good team. They've been outscored 68-3 in their last 2 games. Now, they were 4-4. They had won 4 out of 6. And I said these are going to be the next 2 games that are really going to prove what this team is. And they did. They got blown out back-to-back weeks. And in the second week, they had a chance to really try to do something, getting the Patriots at home on a short week, and they got blown out even worse, or just as bad. And they lost a 68-3 over the last 2 weeks. This team's they're done. They're dead. It was a fun start to the year. It's impressive that they even have this many wins to begin with, but their season's over with, and that was an embarrassing couple of losses. I thought short week at home, they just got embarrassed. They'll bounce back and play well against New England, and they couldn't even score a point. So I was wrong to expect anything more from the Falcons last week.
Where Luke was right.
Colts-Bills was a pick I gave you on Friday, but more so because of the 2 teams. I think the Colts have been underrated. I think finally some people are coming around because of how well Jonathan Taylor is playing. And on the flip side, I think the Bills are a little overrated, and I've been worried about them since the start of the season. They've beaten 1 team with a winning record. They've been up and down. The offense has been concerning. The offensive line's not very good. They can't run the football. All they have is Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs. Allen's turned it over more this year. His quarterback rating is back to where it was prior to last year, with fans back in the building, and that was the concern for Josh Allen. What is he going to be like? You know, it was last year just because of the empty stadiums. The Bills are now in second place. They should have some concerns, where the Colts are now over 500, and you should start taking them pretty seriously in the AFC. And it came to a head Sunday when the Bills went on the road, or I should say the Colts went on the road, and totally blew out the Bills in that game in a big-time win.
Where Luke was wrong.
The Panthers. I thought Cam Newton would give them some juice. They'd win at home against their former coach in the Washington football team. Cam played well, but apparently not well enough. They lost to Taylor Heineke. Now, I shared this little anecdote yesterday. After I gave you that pick on Friday, a professional gambler told me Saturday, oh, no, no, no. Washington football team is the pick of the month. So I had that one backwards. I wish he gave me that information about 36 hours earlier. But I did feel good about the Panthers at home, Cam Newton's return, Washington football team coming to town. It was a good win for the Washington football team. Now you have to keep an eye on them. Back-to-back wins against the Bucs and then the Panthers on the road. Heineke's playing better. The defense has improved. You got a veteran coach in Ron Rivera. Nobody is out of the NFC. I mean, even the Giants lost last night. They're only 3-7. There are still talks about them potentially, you know, if they could go on a run, staying alive in the NFC. That conference is wide open for those wildcard spots, and Washington football team, maybe they're now peaking at the right time, while the Panthers have certainly been fading.
Where Luke was right.
The Titans. This is why you can't trust the Titans. They do this every year. They lose games like this every year. They've already lost one like this year. It's to the Jets. And sure, they went on about a 5-game winning streak, and they beat some good teams, and you're feeling good about them, and then they lay an egg at home to the Texans. Hard to count on a team that is that inconsistent. But more importantly, without Derrick Henry, you knew there would be a larger emphasis on Ryan Tannehill. And he's been doing pretty well. He's been doing okay so far. The offense has not been anything electric without Derrick Henry. But then on Sunday, without Derrick Henry, the team falls behind to the Texans. They have to throw it. Tannehill had the worst game in a Titans uniform in his career. 4 interceptions on Sunday. He has the 6th worst quarterback rating in the NFL. He has as many interceptions as touchdowns now this year. There's concern for this team without Derrick Henry. You can get by for a certain amount of time, right, without your star. It's kind of like the Raiders. You can deal with all that drama for a certain amount of time. Eventually, it's going to catch up to you. You can run on no sleep for a while. You can feel good the next day. But by the second day of not sleeping very much, eventually, it's going to catch up to you. By the end of the week, you're not sleeping at all. You're going to start to feel the effects. That's the Titans. It's catching up to them now without Derrick Henry. Ryan Tannehill's not the guy that can put the team on his back. And for the Titans, even though they have a bunch of good wins this year, they have 2 bad losses, and it's hard to trust an inconsistent team like that who's going to lose to the Jets and then the Texans at home.
Where Luke was wrong.
Trevor Lawrence and the Jaguars. I thought Trevor Lawrence would come in and he'd be a lot like Andrew Luck. He'd be dynamic right away and he would play well enough. You could see maybe there's not enough talent around him. Maybe the defense isn't very good. But you could see like, yeah, this kid's got something already as a rookie. And I thought even in my wildest dreams, Moody Blues, I thought that Trevor Lawrence and Urban Meyer, maybe in year one, they could actually have a winning season. Now, I quickly figured out that's not the case. This is going to be a bad team. But I still thought Trevor Lawrence could have a good year. We've seen good quarterbacks on bad teams. We've seen good young players on bad teams. I'm not sitting here and telling you that Trevor Lawrence is not going to work out in the NFL. It's not what I'm saying. I think he'll be just fine. But I also thought he'd be more dynamic right away. And yet, it's been 5 weeks since he's had a pass over 24 yards. He hasn't thrown a touchdown in a month. He hasn't exceeded 165 yards in a month. Right, we've seen quarterbacks that make plays on bad teams, young quarterbacks that you could see that, oh, you know, he's on a bad team, he's struggling, the offensive line can't protect him, but he's going to be just fine. I need to see more of that from Trevor Lawrence. Now, again, I'm not selling my Trevor Lawrence stock. I think he'll be just fine in the long run, but you got to start showing me something even as a rookie. Bad team, and the quarterback, Trevor Lawrence, has not been very dynamic. He can't overcome the struggles of the Jaguars, and he hasn't been able to do much. I was just expecting more from him at the quarterback position as a rookie. I guess my expectations were too high knowing he was going to Jacksonville. And the last one I'll give you, where I was right, is the Patriots. People were down on Belichick last year, but they were almost 500 with Cam Newton and the most opt-outs in the league. I thought they'd be better this year. I loved the pick of Mac Jones. I thought that was the perfect fit for the Patriots, and here they are in first place. They have the longest winning streak in the league. Their defense statistically is one of the best in the NFL this year. And Mac Jones has played as the best rookie. The Patriots, look out for them. They're getting hot at the right time. They have the second best point differential in the AFC. I know if you're an NFL fan and you're not a Patriots fan, you probably hate the team. And you were looking forward to not worrying about the Patriots anymore. Well, I got bad news. They're back. And you need to start paying attention to them, taking them seriously in the AFC. I figure the Patriots, I picked them as a playoff team at the start of the year. And here they are in first place right now in the AFC, only getting better. That's where I've been right, where I've been wrong lately. On that subject of Trevor Lawrence and Mac Jones, when we come back, if you were to redraft quarterbacks today, would you do it any differently? Would NFL teams do it any differently? We'll get to that when we come back. It's more Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
We'll be right back.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. How would you redraft the quarterbacks in this year's NFL draft? Would Trevor Lawrence still be number one? Get to that in just a moment here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. I ran through last segment where I've been right, where I've been wrong. We try to hold ourselves accountable around here because so many in the industry don't. But also, I have to be honest, and you know it if you listen to the show. As I always say, I don't like to tell you, I told you so, I love to. We all love to brag when we get something right. So, I'll let you know when I get things right, but we also hold ourselves accountable, let you know when I get things wrong. Along those lines, for my picks, right in the middle. Now, you could say that that's wrong because you want to have a winning week. So 500 is considered a losing week, especially if you're a real gambler, you factor in the VIG, 500 is a losing week. Even though you go 500 because of the VIGs, right, you still lose money in the process. So I could have included that, but again, for full transparency, I always give you the rundown after the weekend of my picks. We went 4-4 for the picks I gave out on Friday. Great weekend in college football, 3-1. Bad weekend in the NFL, 1-3. Total it up, 4-4 in the picks I gave you Friday. I'll give you my picks. We'll be on the air this Friday for Black Friday. While you're in line getting yourself a discounted toaster, we'll be taking care of you on the Morrow Midday Show, getting ready for the football weekend. We'll have a normal football Friday. So we'll be here on Friday after, obviously, we'll be off for Thanksgiving on Thursday. I'll be napping during the Lions game. We'll come in Friday and get ready for the big football weekend because this is always for college football. I mean, this is the huge weekend, obviously, Clemson, South Carolina. So we'll be here on Friday, and I'll give you my picks then. But we still are 14 games over 500, 55% of the year, but we went exactly 500 this past weekend. I usually include it in the right and wrong, but when you go 500, I don't know, which one is it? In between. I did mention Trevor Lawrence and Mac Jones last segment separately. If you were redrafting the NFL draft, the quarterbacks only, in the draft this year, would you take them in a different order? Do you think NFL teams would? To refresh your memory, it was Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, Trey Lance in that order as the top three picks. And then later on, you got to Justin Fields at number 11, Mac Jones number 15. So let's just take those quarterbacks. That's the order. Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, Trey Lance, Justin Fields, Mac Jones. What do you think would change? Would Trevor Lawrence still be number one? I would say yes. Let me first give you my order, and then I'll give you just a little analysis on my rundown. I think Trevor Lawrence is still number one. I would actually put Mac Jones 2. And then Justin Fields 3, Trey Lance 4, Zach Wilson 5. Now, you could have a really good debate between Mac Jones and Justin Fields because I think Mac Jones is, in part, maybe large part, in part, his success has been a product of his situation, of his surroundings. If you put Mac Jones in Jacksonville and Trevor Lawrence in New England, then it'd be the opposite, right? Mac Jones would be looking like Trevor Lawrence. Trevor Lawrence would look like the best rookie in the class. We talked about this around the draft. We talk about this every year. It is so important where you go in the NFL. If you go back and you look, it's actually the quarterbacks that go later in the first round that are usually the more successful ones, and it's not hard to figure out why, because they're going to the better teams. Trevor Lawrence goes to Jacksonville, they're a train wreck. Zach Wilson goes to the Jets, train wreck. But Mac Jones doesn't get taken until 15th overall, and he goes to the greatest coach of all time, who is also the best defensive coach in the league, right? And the Patriots are in first place this year, and he looks like the best rookie. So you have to acknowledge that. In this scenario, in this hypothetical, when you're redrafting, you're not necessarily drafting them to the Patriots, right? You're drafting them to your team, whoever your team is. And so it's just a hypothetical general team. You're picking who you think will be the best quarterback for you, not based off of situation, but based off of their ability. That's why I still think Trevor Lawrence would be number one. If we redrafted today, I think for the most part, no matter which team is picking first, they would take Trevor Lawrence because of that ceiling, because of his potential. I don't think that you've been turned off enough by him in his rookie year to think like, oh, yeah, this guy, he's in over his head. He doesn't have it. No, we understand that he's just on a bad team. And he'll develop. He'll get better. Hopefully the Jaguars will get better. That will help him out. He still has those same tools. He just doesn't have the pieces around him. I then go Mac Jones number two because even though it's based a lot on his surroundings right now, I still, just from what I've seen, he looks ready. He's the only quarterback coming out of the preseason this year that did not look like a rookie, that you knew you could start week one and he'd have a handle on things, right? Like Zach Wilson still looked frazzled. Trey Lance and Justin Fields were not ready to start. Even when Justin Fields came in last month, he was still not ready. Trevor Lawrence looks ready, not quite as much as Mac Jones. He's still, when he's been pressured this year, he's been lousy. He's been a little skittish. quick feet a little bit in the pocket. But Mac Jones just looks cool, calm, collective, to use that old cliche. He looks like a veteran as a rookie. So I think for those reasons, I put Mac Jones at number two. Justin Fields probably has a higher ceiling, but I think he also has a lower floor. And from what I've seen this year, I think I trust Mac Jones a little bit more to at least not bottom out as much as maybe a Justin Fields. So I go Jones two, I go Fields three, because I still think he has plenty of potential. And then four is Trey Lance. We just haven't seen him, but it's like quarterback rating. You know, you can have certain quarterbacks play so poorly, people will tweet out the stat, you know, like he could spike the ball in his next 10 passes and have a better quarterback rating, right? Because you're playing so bad, you throw some interceptions, you're throwing incompletions, that by doing nothing would be an upgrade than what you're doing. You're a negative. And so that's the case here. Trey Lance, by doing nothing, has been an upgrade over Zach Wilson because he's been a net negative for the Jets. So even though we haven't seen Trey Lance, and even though he's not ready, I would take my chance over him because I would take my chances with him over Zach Wilson because of the fact that you don't know what you could get. It's like what's behind door number one, right? You know what you have in your hands, or this holiday season as we head towards Christmas, you do one of those gift exchanges. You know what's in your hand, and then you have to determine, do I want to keep this, or do I want to swap it out for another gift that hasn't been opened yet? It could be something better. It could be nothing. It could be coal, or it could be something really cool. It could be an iPod. That's a dated reference. People don't use iPods anymore. It could be an iPad. Right, so that's the case here. Trey Lance, I don't know what I have, but I do know what I have with Zach Wilson. And if you're Trey Lance, you can't get much worse than that so far. And I thought Zach Wilson at draft time, I said he has the largest bust potential of any of these quarterbacks, and I still feel that way today. So if I had to redraft the quarterbacks, Trevor Lawrence has not wowed me like I thought he would as a rookie, but because of that potential, I think he would still go number one. I then put Mac Jones number two, followed by Justin Fields, Trey Lance, and Zach Wilson, who I liked the least amount going into the draft. I haven't changed my mind on that. I would put him number five. I only feel stronger about that. I only feel worse about that pick or that quarterback now than I did at the time. And that's how I would redraft or reorder these rookie quarterbacks in the NFL. I don't imagine we'll see Justin Fields on Thanksgiving. He has that injury. I'm sure it'll be Andy Dalton, which goes along the lines of that terrible matchup with the Lions. But by the way, we're getting all these stories. So, you know, Matt Nagy, reports are he's going to get fired after this Thanksgiving game. We'll see if that's the case. It's a tough spot to be in. But we're getting these stories now. Like last night, the Chicago Bulls game, a fire Nagy chant broke out at the Bulls game. I just saw this article during the commercial break that an Illinois high school football coach had to reach out and apologize. I guess he didn't have to, but he felt the need to reach out and apologize to Matt Nagy because at his high school game on Saturday, the fans broke out in a fire Nagy chant at a high school game in Illinois on Saturday. And apparently, I guess it went viral. I don't know. I guess you assume Matt Nagy saw it, because otherwise, why are you bringing attention to it by reaching out and apologizing to the guy about, hey, our fans were saying that you should get fired. I'm sorry for that. I was like, oh, I had no idea. Right. So I guess this video went viral. But I just saw that TMZ had that story this afternoon about the Illinois coach apologizing. That's how bad things have gotten. You got fans at the Bulls game. You got fans at an Illinois high school game. They're all chanting fire Nagy. According to reports, Thursday will be his final game at the Bears. We won't get to see Justin Fields on Thursday. But in terms of these quarterbacks, that's important for that development. Changing coaches in the middle of his first year, bringing a new coach, new offense, that doesn't help the development of the quarterback either. Mac Jones is in the most sturdiest situation. He's got the best spot, and it's showing. But I also think he has shown enough himself that I would take him second if we redrafted the quarterbacks right ahead of Justin Fields. You can always join the conversation, 843-721-9500, to give us a call. Let's go to the phones. Super Dave is with us. Dave, what's going on? How are you?
Not bad. How you all doing?
Oh, doing well. What's up?
Hey, you know, you're wrong on that. Number one spot is Tom Brady, because Tom Brady had a winning game last night. Giants lost, and the Jets lost Sunday. They're sucked because they can't beat nobody. And who are the Lions playing Thursday?
They're playing the Bears.
That's a close game, but I would give that one to the Bears.
You think the Bears win on Thursday?
Yeah. The Bears will win on Thursday, but...
All right. Well, while we're on the subject then, you got the Raiders-Cowboys as the second game. Cowboys are favored by 8. Who wins, the Raiders or the Cowboys?
Raiders should upset the Cowboys.
Wow.
Because they lost Sunday. So, you know, that's quite effective. Plus, the owner sucks, too. So, you know.
Who, for the Cowboys?
I hate Jerry, whatever, Brown, whatever. So,
Jerry Jones?
Yeah, Jerry Jones. So,
yeah, I don't know if the Raiders owner is any good either.
So, I hope they have to. And the Cowboys, Bob's in favor of Cowboys. So,
yes.
Anything Bob's in favor of is down. You know?
Of course. Easy to root against, yes. And then what about the nightcap? Is the Bills against the Saints? The Bills are favored by 5.5. Who's going to win that one?
I feel like this Bills should get out. It should be all right, you know. It sounds like it might be a home game for the Bills, right?
No, it's in New Orleans.
Wow.
Yeah, you still like the Bills?
I may go with the upset.
Oh. You like a couple of upsets.
I would go against that, take the points.
Okay. What about Thanksgiving? What's the best thing to eat on Thanksgiving?
It's always turkey, ham, and the old traditional style of eating, you know?
But you prefer the turkey over any of the sides?
Oh, the turkey and the sides. I'm an Army guy, so we got to eat.
All right. All right, good answer. Appreciate it, Super Dave.
And also now Ole Miss is going to beat Mississippi State.
Ole Miss is going to beat Mississippi State in the Egg Bowl on Thanksgiving. You've been calling that shot for a couple of weeks.
Florida, I think they upset Florida.
Well,
they did. I think that's right. But anyway, I believe that in the Egg Bowl, it's going to be Ole Miss.
Okay. Ole Miss gets the win. If they win, how are you making your eggs? How do you like your eggs?
Always scrambled.
You got to go scrambled. All right, so you think Ole Miss is going to scramble the eggs of Mississippi State on Thursday?
Boil or scramble or make a nice sandwich, you know?
Oh, there you go. Not bad. All right, so when Ole Miss wins Thursday night, you have a nice little capper to your Thanksgiving. You make a nice egg sandwich and celebrate Lane Kiffin's win.
There you go.
All right,
that sounds good to me.
All right. Appreciate it, Super Dave.
Have a good Thanksgiving.
Hey, you as well.
Okay,
and everybody else
bye-bye
out there. By the way, Mississippi State's favored in that game. I know they're home. I'm surprised by that. 1.5-point favorite against Ole Miss. Now, Mississippi State, Leach has been really good. 5 wins already in a year and a half against ranked teams. They're taking on number 12, Ole Miss. But that may be the highlight of the day. You know, Raiders, Cowboys could be fun. Saints, Bills could be fun. But the Saints aren't playing well, and now you get Trevor Siemian. Ole Miss, Mississippi State, 7:30 kickoff. Mike Leach against Lane Kiffin. That's probably the football game of the day on Thanksgiving. And it's try to stay up. Don't eat too much turkey so you can make it. You know, you're not falling asleep on the couch by that point. Ole Miss, Mississippi State. The Egg Bowl on Thursday night may be the best of the bunch. And, of course, Tom Brady is always number one, but we're talking specifically rookie quarterbacks. And in that conversation, of course, I'm taking Tom Brady over any of the rookies as well. But in this case, just strictly rookie quarterbacks. Take a break. Come back with more. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Will spring football finally work in 2022? It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. They announced yesterday the USFL's coming back with a lot of the same team names as the original USFL from the 80s. And the USFL gave probably the best, you know, in the history of trying to make these secondary leagues work and these spring football leagues, the USFL was probably the best example. Now, I do think the XFL, we've had the AAF and the XFL in recent years. Neither one has made it beyond the first season. I think the XFL, if it wasn't for the pandemic, I think they would have been all right and would still be around. But the pandemic threw everything off. But they were doing okay. And the big reason why was because they were tied to the big-time TV networks. And that's the case here at USFL. It's actually at least partially owned. I don't know if it's fully owned, but by Fox Sports. And so when you already have that in your bag and you don't have to pay to get on TV and the games are going to be on Fox, that's a big aid to be on Fox and FS1 and even FS2 and have your games there. And in the spring, you know, without any other football, You get the good primetime spots on the weekends. So that is a big assistance. That could be a big help as the USFL will kick off in April of 2022. They'll play every Saturday and Sunday and a 10-game season. For the first year, they're all going to play in one location. We've seen this lately with like the fan-controlled football league, another one of these secondary leagues. They all play in the same stadium, the same town. They're all in the same area, and it's almost like, you know, you're all in college together, or you're at summer camp and you're staying together in the same area, and you practice in the same place, and you play in the same place, and it's all this one location. And that's the official location of the league. They're going to do that for now, and eventually hope to branch out to the actual cities. So it's a little bit awkward that we have these team names, and they're a lot of the same ones from the 80s. But, for example, you have the Michigan Panthers. I don't know how many Panthers there are in Michigan. Right? You already have the Carolina Panthers. I know that that was a team way back when. They won one of the championships in the 80s. But, I don't know. The Michigan Panthers just doesn't sound right. The New Jersey Generals. I always like that one. Philadelphia Stars. Pittsburgh Maulers. That's a good one for a football team. You got the Birmingham Stallions coming back. The Houston Gamblers. The New Orleans Breakers. And the Tampa Bay Bandits, which is another good one. As well. Those are going to be the eight teams for the USFL that are going to start play in the spring. But as mentioned, right, a little bit awkward. They're all going to play in one location, and then they hope to eventually branch out to those cities. So they're all going to have city names, but none of them are or state names, really. But they're none of them are actually going to play in those areas. You're going to have the Michigan Panthers, and you're going to want, like, Michigan to get behind this team, but it doesn't really matter. It doesn't make a difference. They're all going to be playing wherever, out in Los Angeles, in the same stadium with no fans there. So the XFL, by the way, aiming for a return in 2023. Joe, going back to the original USFL back in the day, did you ever watch those games? Did you have a team? Were you into the USFL at all?
I remember watching some of it, you know, when I was a kid.
Did you have a favorite team or a favorite name?
Not really. Did kind of follow the Generals some because Herschel Walker was drafted, you know, and ended up going there. So I watched them some. And I was going to ask about, are they going to bring back the Memphis Showboats?
That's a pretty good one, too. No news on that. Maybe the league, if they are successful and they even get a second season, because all others lately haven't in these spring campaigns, maybe they'll try to expand. But they're leaving out teams like the Jacksonville Bulls, the Orlando Renegades, which, by the way, I think we had an arena football team, weren't they, the Orlando Renegades?
The Orlando Predators.
Oh, they were the Predators. You're right. What was the Tampa Bay Storm, not the Bandits. The Bandits were USFL. I thought maybe that was a repeat as well in arena football. But, yeah, you're right. The Orlando not Renegades. I think there was a different team called the Renegades at one point in arena football. The Portland Breakers were another one from the 80s that aren't included. San Antonio Gunslingers. And the one maybe I'm most surprised with is the Los Angeles Express. I would have thought that there'd be, a team in L.A., but, B, you'd also bring back from the original USFL, you'd want to bring back the Los Angeles Express. I was not around to watch USFL football, but that's one of the team names that I do remember from that league, along with the Generals and some of these others. But the L.A. Express, they're being left out of the new USFL.
Also, footage of the U.S. or the L.A. Express was used in the HBO series First and Ten.
Oh, I've never watched that one.
Yeah, that was on in the 80s.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense. What else are we missing? The Baltimore Stars, they didn't make the cut. There's, you know, there's quite a few teams back in the day.
And also another league that kind of gave the NFL, or I guess the closest to giving it a run for its money, was the World Football League in the 1970s.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe they'll bring that back in 2023, and we'll try to make that work. I always complain about, like, all these reboots in Hollywood. We're trying the same thing with these football leagues. The XFL is trying for a third attempt in 2023. The USFL is coming back now after their run in the 80s. The AAF, we'll see what happens with them. That, you know, that didn't work. See if spring football actually works in 2022 with the USFL. We'll wrap up hour two next. It's the Mora Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Mora Midday Show.
Wrapping up hour two here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. By the way, some breaking news. Jason Garrett just fired as offensive coordinator of the Giants. That offense was a disaster. Coming off a bye last night, the offense was terrible last night, and that was probably Daniel Jones' worst performance in his Giants career, and I don't think that's hyperbole. And the Buccaneers got right, scored 20 unanswered to win. Tom Brady still hasn't lost three straight games since 2002, his first full year as a starter. So Jason Garrett out in New York, you knew that wasn't going to work. If you watched him in Dallas, he was never very creative offensively. The Giants now needing a new offensive coordinator. We'll see where Garrett goes from here. You can always join the conversation throughout the afternoon, 843-721-9500, to give us a call. Let's go to the phone. Steve in Somerville is with us. Steve, what's going on? How are you?
Pretty good. How about yourself?
Doing well. What's up?
Want to congratulate you on y'all's music. I'm 71 years old, and y'all play all that good stuff, so I really enjoy it. But I wanted to mention the Carolina-Clemson game and see what you think about St. Dabo starting to go into the portal, since he's obviously slipping a little bit and these other teams are having success in the portal. Of course, he said he would never do that, but he said he would quit coaching when the players got money. So,
yes.
What do you think?
I take it you're not a Clemson fan, huh?
No, I'm not. I'm not.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no, I think it's about time. I've been on this subject throughout the year. In fact, at one point I felt like we were kind of beating it to death because we brought it up on multiple days. I think it's about time you try to take advantage of the transfer portal because, as the old cliche goes, and appreciate the call, Steve, we're up against the top of the hour here. The old cliche goes, right, either adapt or die. And for Clemson, they haven't been adapting when it comes to the transfer portal. And you can try to take the high road. I said the same thing about hiring Hugh Freeze, you know, like Gamecock fans this past offseason. We don't want who. Well, if you don't do it, somebody else will, and then they'll pass you by. And Hugh Freeze will come to your building and beat you because he's a good coach. Similar here. You don't want to get into the transfer portal because of what you feel one way or another. Okay. But Alabama grabbed four transfers this year. Their top tackler was a transfer. Right? Their number two receiver is a transfer. Michigan State's having a great year because their running back, who's a transfer. So you can have your thoughts about it, but other teams are taking advantage, and it's allowing them to kind of pass you by, plug their holes, have better years. So I think it's somewhat long over. You know, Clemson should be using the transfer portal. I don't see an issue with it, and I think they'll benefit from doing so. They could have this year helped out that offensive line. Hour three next.